All righty, rocking and rolling. It is the Zach Gelb Show. Abbott and the Big Ten are hosting the We Give Blood Drive between all 18 Big Ten schools in the largest blood donation competition of our lifetime to fight the largest blood shortage in a generation. Matt Leinart is, of course, partnering with Abbott and calling on all Big Ten fans, students, and alumni, particularly his fellow USC Trojans, to give blood to combat this generational blood shortage. And now joining us is the 2004 Heisman Trophy winner in Matt Leinart. Matt, always great to have you on. How you been?
I'm good, buddy. Thank you. Thanks for having me. And thanks for shouting out Abbott. Obviously, they're doing a great thing, and I'm happy to be a part of that.
Yeah, we'll talk more about them in a bit. I was jealous. I know you were at Colorado last week for Big Noon. Last year, they were a team of individuals, I thought. And early on this season, I thought that was the case. But now they're playing complimentary three-phase football, and it's really cool to see. And I think they're going to make the playoff.
I mean, right? Isn't it crazy? They control their own destiny to make a playoff in year two with Prime. And I think to your point, like we saw them and last year they showed the flashes and we knew Shador and Travis Hunter and the offense could be great. The defense struggled a year ago. It's just been a complete turnaround. Like the defense is much improved. They have playmakers on that side of the ball outside of Travis Hunter and their defense has kept them in games, right? Which wasn't the case a year ago. Shador is elite. I think just Shador is just an elite quarterback, which always helps. But then you have a bunch of receivers and guys that have stepped up and the offensive line still is a work in progress, but a lot better than they've been. So, yeah, I mean, look, they year two and it's been really remarkable to watch them. I mean, they have a path to get to a playoff, which is crazy. But it's a really good football team. Like this isn't like smoke and mirrors and they're getting lucky. Like they just put up almost 50 on Utah last week. And I know Utah is down this year, but that's still like a big time respectable program in what Kyle Whittingham has done. And they dominated them. And I thought that was really impressive.
I love college football, even though I'm from New York. For some reason, college football doesn't really resonate here. But the Giants are going to have an early draft pick and people go, oh, you're a national guy in New York. You know, who do you like to take if the Giants have the first overall pick and they need a quarterback? And I think the conversations between Cam Ward and Shador Sanders, to me, those are the two best guys that are eligible. Who do you think's the better one?
Yeah, I mean, they're different. You know, and I think Cam Ward is sensational. And I'm actually really interested to see kind of Cam Ward in this process with the draft process and the combine and all of that stuff. Cause he is really a unique talent. He can move, he can run. He's played a lot of football. He's older. So I think the game, you know, translating to the next level, I would give the edge to Shador. I think I just his ability really to play from within the pocket and then just the beating he's taken still like his Superman trait, like, is his accuracy and his toughness. Like, he's tough as nails, right? He gets his a lot, and he just keeps getting up. He is supremely accurate. And why? I mean, that's one of the most important traits, in my opinion, in the NFL is because the windows are so close, so small, and so many talented players on the defense. Like, you got to be able to put the ball where you need to be. He can do everything else, but that's the one thing that just separates him from everybody else in this class is just the accuracy, the toughness. He's a great athlete. He doesn't move like Cam Ward, but he moves well enough. So it'll be fun. It's always fun to see these quarterbacks go through the process and kind of see who ends up on top. Shador also, you know, with Deion being his dad, like he's got that blood in him. You know, he's got that type of dog and confidence in him that you need that his dad obviously had and made him one of the best football players to ever live. Shador's got a lot of that quality in him as well. And he's been really impressive to watch over the last 2 years.
I'm not saying Deion will never go to the NFL, but I fully believe he'll be back at Colorado next season. How about yourself?
Yeah, I mean, look, I think I do, too. I don't think he'll go to the NFL. And again, I don't know. I mean, that's my guess. I just don't think he wants to. I think he really enjoys developing and coaching kind of this generation from 18 to 22, even though it's different now and these kids are making money and all that. You're still developing young men, right? And I think that's really important to him. And that's been a message that he's been very clear on. It's just developing and motivating them to be great young men off the field, right? So Colorado, he's going to probably get thrown a lot of money to go coach somewhere in the SEC or somewhere, depending on what jobs open up. But Colorado, I'm not sure if you've ever been there. It's I put this on Instagram. It's like, it's literally the most beautiful place.
It's beautiful,
backdrop.
Yeah.
It's beautiful, and you get 50,000. It's a great stadium. They have a lot of money there to like build. It's just, it's, you're in the Big 12, so you have a pat. Like, there's so many great positives about being there. He's clearly getting guys there. You know, obviously it'll be interesting to see if he does stay with both his kids leaving and Travis Hunter being gone, how that impacts recruiting, because those guys are a big part of the reason why people want to go play for Colorado, right? So, but yeah, my gut would say he stays. Again, I have no dog in the fight. I have no idea what he's going to do, but I think he's great for college football. I really do. He's so unique and he's so different, and it's working.
Matt Leinart here with us on behalf of Abbott. We'll talk about them and the great work Matt's doing in just a second. I'm a Heisman Trophy voter. I know you won a Heisman Trophy award back in 2004 and also get to vote. I think five guys will be finalists this year. I think it will be Dillon Gabriel, Shedeur Sanders will get invites to New York City. And when I look at who could potentially win it, I do think it's really between Ashton Jeanty and also Travis Hunter. To me, and obviously Cam Ward's going to get an invite too, but to me, those are the two guys who could win it. Who do you think is going to win the Heisman this year right now?
It's you know, it's awesome when you put it that way, and you look at a running back who I don't know the last running back to win it, but you know, you get one occasionally, and then you know, Devontae
Derrick Henry, Smith, I think.
So Derrick Henry, but Travis Hunter is, well, first of all, with Ashton Jeanty, I love him, man. This dude is a beast. I don't care what team, what conference he plays on. Like, most of his stuff comes after getting hit anyway. Like, he just can't get tackled. Like, so this isn't like he's playing against cream puffs. Like, that dude is the real deal. I think in order for him to like really have a shot, like, you got to break Barry's record, and you just have to be, you know, you got to go off here the final couple weeks of the season, which he probably will. So, obviously keeping a close eye on that. And I love his game. I think he's a hell of a player. Travis Hunter is, I don't need to tell you this, but like, he is just, he's one of one. He's very rare. We haven't seen anything like this in college football. And Charles Woodson, who's a good buddy of ours, a Big Noon and a good friend of mine. And like, he was the last defense, like what he did, he's not doing what Travis is doing, playing 180 snaps a game. And like, elite, he probably could have, Charles for sure probably could have, but it's just a different age of football. I said this on our show last week, like, LeBron and Shohei and guys like this are just one of one. We'll never see another LeBron. We'll never see another Shohei Ohtani, probably what he's able to do, hitting, pitching, all of those things. Like, they're phenomenons. Travis Hunter is that. He's got a lot of football left. We're going to get to watch him for a long time, no matter what he does in the NFL. But at the collegiate level, there's no one that's done what he's done consistently week in and week out. And the impact that he's had on both sides of the ball. He's elite on both sides of the ball. And he's a big reason why they're in this position. So, all that being said, I mean, he's the favorite to win. I think if he does, he deserves it, but there's a lot of, like, Dillon Gabriel's great. Cam Ward is great. Jeanty is great. Shedeur, I hope he deserves to be in New York. I just, again, two guys on the same team. I dealt with that with Reggie a little bit the year after I won. I was able to go to New York, but, you know, does that maybe hinder him a little bit? But you said five. I hope they bring five. I don't know why. Sometimes they bring three in this, like, bring as many as you can that get votes. Like,
I think, like, it will definitely be four. Shedeur, you're right. I think he should be there, but you only get, for people that obviously don't vote, they don't know the process, you only get three votes if you're a voter.
Yeah. Well, we'll see. I think it's been a fantastic race. Again, Travis Hunter's doing something we've never seen. Ashton Jeanty is an absolute stud. And then you guys like get Gabriel, Shedeur, like, we're getting really great quarterback play. It's been a fun year to watch that race and see how it unfolds here, the most important month. So,
but let me ask you about USC. I was talking to Clay Matthews, your buddy, last week, and he said they need more grit. They need more toughness. I know they made the change, obviously, at quarterback with Jaden coming in and starting last week. They beat Nebraska. This is now 3 years of Lincoln Riley, one good year, and then the last 2 years have been disappointing. Where's your belief level still in Lincoln Riley?
Yeah, I mean, Clay's right. I mean, it's a toughness, it's a mindset, it's a mentality, and that's a culture thing, right? That starts from the top, and that's how you handle your team. That's the, you know, Pete was great at that because Pete was high energy, fun, and all that, but he built a culture of competitiveness and desire to be the best you can be, and that was in competition, that was in practice, that was in everything we did at USC, and that was why, like we always said, like when it was the second half or it was the fourth quarter, whether we were blowing someone out or was close, like we always knew that we would finish, and it was always finish. And that's something that USC has just struggled with this year. And sometimes the ball can bounce the other way and you can win all those close games, right? Like they are close in that regard, but it is a mentality, and it's a mentality that's missing in my opinion. And that just needs to change in order for them to be successful. I would say the pulse, like people are frustrated. People want to see better. And I think that's justified. I think Lincoln would tell you the same thing. You mentioned Jaden, you know, Jaden played great last week and gave him a little bit of a spark. And I think also it just gives the fan base a little bit of a spark to see potentially what USC can be in the future. You know, that's an audition to be the starting quarterback job, not just this year, but next year. But, you know, they need to be better. You know, there's no reason to believe, you know, look at the games this year. They should have beat Penn State. They should have beat Michigan. They should have beat Minnesota, but should have isn't going to get it done. Like, you need to figure out how to win those games, and you need to finish how to build a certain level of toughness to win those types of games. And that's just something that they don't have yet.
Tell me what you're doing today with Abbott, Matt Leiner.
Yeah, so Abbott teamed up with the Big Ten Conference to do the We Give Blood Drive competition. So the school that receives the most blood donations will receive $1 million award. So plenty of incentive out there for everybody to donate blood. We have a severe blood shortage, blood crisis in our country. There's a lot of people that are impacted by that, whether, you know, mothers after childbirth, accident victims, cancer patients, you name it. There's just so many people out there that need blood that maybe don't have the opportunity because there's a shortage. So Abbott's doing a really cool thing with the Big Ten, this competition, obviously, to create awareness. You can go to Big Ten, bigten.org/Abbott, excuse me, sorry, to pick a location. You can go donate. You just have to upload your proof of donation to whatever school you want. You know, you don't have to be an alumni. You can just pick a school that you want to donate for. I will say this, USC is at the bottom right now. Like at the very bottom.
Got to get them going.
Yeah, we got to get them going. There is a blood drive this Thursday at USC. Starting at 4 o'clock. It ends December 7th, which is Big Ten championship game. So still plenty of time to get out there. I'll be giving blood this week. We'll be at the Ohio State game. So I'll be in Columbus going to give blood over there for USC, obviously. But really, I've worked with Abbott before. They're a great partner. They do a lot of great things. And again, just trying to raise awareness and get people out there to go donate blood.
Indiana going to give Ohio State a game, you think, with Cignetti?
But the numbers seem pretty high. I was like, "Ooh, that was interesting." I think so. I mean, this team, look, Ohio State is really talented, and I think Ohio State could win the title. Like, that's how good they are and can be. We've also seen them struggle against Nebraska. We also saw them, you know, have a tough game against Penn State, right? Which we all kind of expected. Indiana's a really good football team. That coach has got a lot of confidence. That team plays with a lot of confidence, and it's not just this is a really good team and they've benefited from an easy schedule, you could argue. That team will give Ohio State a hell of a fight. There's no doubt about that. That's a really, really good coach team with really good skills. They got a lot of talent and they got a belief, man. So it's going to be fun. That's going to be a good game.
Last thing I'll ask you, because I know you got to bounce. Carson Beck, it's been a disappointing season, but last week when he needed to, he was at his best. And he could save the whole narrative on him in the next few months, really, and go win another national championship. Just what are your thoughts on him?
Way to answer, man. Like, that's what you got to do as a quarterback. It's not always going to be easy. I think I've been in that situation where you're on a team where there's so much expectation, right? There's so much just expectation. They've won championships. And going into this year, he's potentially the number one pick in the draft. There's just a lot that goes at it. And I understand sometimes – I think when you watch the film, and I've watched a lot of film on him this year, you just press a little bit, right? You try too hard, and then it results in sometimes some of the negative plays. I will say this about Carson Beck. Like, their receiver, like they don't have the playmakers that he had a year ago.
They're missing Bowers, big time.
They're missing guys. Their offensive line has been beaten up at times. Like, George is still a great team talent. Kirby's a great coach. This is just a different team. Like, they just don't have what we're used to. Like, typically they've had great running game. Like, they haven't had that this year. So there's a lot of pieces around him that kind of fallen short, which in turn affects the quarterback position at times. That's just the way it works. So, but a lot of it also has been on him too. And I was happy to see him bounce back, because Tennessee's, that's an elite defense, and he tore him up, and he bounced back. And as a quarterback, you got to have a short memory, whether it's the next play or whether it's the next game, and he did that. So I was proud to see him bounce back. He's taken a lot of criticism. He seems pretty unflappable, like it doesn't really bother him, and that showed last week.
He's Matt Leiner on behalf of Abbott. Matt, keep on kicking ass with the podcast and also Big Noon Kickoff, and it's amazing how someone who's a friend of Bron, and I'm not talking about LeBron James for people that are just listening, could be this well-spoken and this articulate on the air. It's crazy.
Oh, shout out to Bron. Look at Bron getting a shout out on here. I love it.
Now his head will be too big, you know?
thanks for having me, bud. I appreciate it, man.
All righty, it is the Infinity Sports Network. It is the Zach Gelb Show. Let's get to what I think the College Football Playoff Committee will do tonight. I think this is the toughest rankings that we're going to see to try to predict. The first time I thought it was obvious. The second time I just had to flip-flop two teams. This one I have no damn clue because you usually don't see, I feel like, back-to-back-to-back Big Ten teams, but suggesting what the previous rankings were, you should probably see that tonight. Tennessee falling last week is then going to have them fade out of the top 12 in terms of who makes the bracket. And I would imagine Georgia gets back in, but how high is Georgia going to go? And here's the other thing, Stu. I understand the committee doesn't always make sense, and I just want to see the right 12 teams get in. I'm not a big right now let's freak out on the order type of guy. I just want to have them get the right 12 teams in, and if they put in all the 12 teams that I say, I'm good with that. But I will say, the Georgia ranking to me is the most fascinating one because I could see the committee putting Georgia past either Ole Miss or Alabama, but if they do that, it's kind of stupid because Alabama beat Georgia and Ole Miss beat Georgia. So, like, to me, yes, Georgia got a good win last week over Tennessee, and Alabama didn't beat Tennessee. But it's one of those things where Georgia should be back in the top 12, but I don't think they should jump either Ole Miss or Alabama. And I can't sit here, Stu, confidently and say that Georgia isn't going to jump Alabama and Ole Miss tonight. So that's the confusing part, Stu, when I look at the rankings.
Yeah, I mean, I know it's not the same, but if you look at the top 25, they have Georgia over Ole Miss and behind Alabama. So I don't know if that means anything, but I guess it's a possibility.
Are you confident after tonight that Notre Dame is going to be in a spot to have a home playoff game? So either 8, 7, 6, or 5. Do you think Notre Dame will be in that top part to get a home playoff game after the rankings tonight?
Yeah, I do. And I think if they win out, they will definitely have a home game.
I would agree with that as well. And here's the other thing. When you have the SEC championship game and the Big Ten championship game, which we don't know who's going to play in that, is the loser of that game, and let's say that's how they pick up their third loss, are they going to get penalized where a team that didn't make the Big Ten or SEC championship game, probably more so in the SEC than it would be in the Big Ten with how it's currently slated. It's just more of an SEC question. Would the SEC loser of the SEC championship game get their third loss and be out? And then a team, I don't know, like let's say if Georgia only has two losses in the regular season, I think they're getting in. But if one of these teams get to the SEC championship game, that's where they get their third loss. It's almost as if now we're penalizing and having a punitive action for making it farther into the conference championship game than a team that wouldn't, and then they would get to play longer into the actual season of college football. That, to me, is another big thing to monitor. Maybe not tonight, but when you get towards the final rankings and when the bracket comes out, do we have a screw job that goes on between a team that got into the SEC championship game that ends up losing, Stowe?
Yeah, that's fascinating. I mean, like, off the top of my head, if you're saying a three-loss team, I would say they're out, but you're right. That would be
If they get their third loss in the regular season, donezo.
Right.
But if their third loss happens in the SEC championship game,
it's a little different.
At least they're there compared to one of those two-loss teams in the SEC that didn't have to go there. That's why if I'm Georgia, if I'm like a Bama or an Ole Miss, you just take care of business in the regular season, and I think you say, okay, even though we could get to the SEC championship game and we're confident that we could win, and then you would get a bye because the SEC champion, here's a hot take, is going to be one of the highest four ranked teams, conference champions. They're going to get a bye. But you also have to weigh the other part of it. If you lose, since we haven't seen this before, do you get screwed over here? So if I'm a Georgia, if I'm an Alabama, if I'm an Ole Miss, I think I'm good. Just went on out and hope that, you know, you have two other teams jump me to get into the SEC championship game. Because I have no clue what the committee is going to do and how they're going to evaluate this year, because we've never seen a 12-team playoff before. So I'll give you my 12 teams tonight. And I'm not giving the order in terms of, okay, like let's say if I put BYU as a bye, I'm not saying they're actually the fourth best team in the country. I'm a bracket guy, all right? I'm telling you how I think the bracket will look tonight. So in a number one, it's obvious, undefeated Oregon. In a number two, I do think the SEC champion right now is going to be Texas. Here's where it gets tricky for the byes. In the ACC, last week, they kept Miami in after a loss. They dropped them down to the fourth bye spot, the final bye spot. BYU just lost. So I'll just ask this question. Does SMU replace Miami? They didn't last week. I don't think they would this week. So I think Miami is not only going to have a bye once again, they may not win the ACC this year, but I do think Miami this week is going to get that third bye spot and move back up. But with that being said, I could see the case why you would say, maybe you replace Miami in the ACC. I don't think the committee will do so since they didn't do it last week. BYU is going to be fascinating because sometimes these rankings are done to do what? Have a reaction. Spark conversation. No offense to BYU. I love Jake Retzlaff. I love Kalani Sitake. They could still win the Big 12. And they got a fun game this weekend up against Arizona State. It's going to be a really good game. I can't wait to see that game. But with BYU losing to Kansas, even though it was their first loss of the season, does that mean they're going to push BYU out for this week's rankings and put somebody else in that Big 12 representative spot that knows how to draw a little conversation? And I'm talking about the Colorado Buffaloes. I don't think they will. I don't. I'm not saying they like it's impossible. It has definitely crossed my mind. But I'm going to keep BYU in there for now and getting a bye spot. So Oregon, Texas, Miami, BYU, I do think will be your four byes tonight in that order. Fifth spot, obvious, it's Ohio State. Six, the committee, even Hickey was saying he thought that Penn State was ranked a little bit too high. With one loss and it being to Ohio State, I do think Penn State is going to be in at number six, sixth seed. This is where we get tricky. Because if you just bump everybody up by the last week rankings, right, you would think Indiana would be seven and Notre Dame would be eight. I would say probably after the Ohio State spot at five, that's when you start to look, and assuming Texas is the SEC winner, do one of these SEC teams jump up and elevate themselves to number six this week at all? I'm going to go by logic and by the previous rankings and how my formula has been working so far. So I'm going to say Penn State is the sixth seed in the bracket. Indiana is the seventh seed in the bracket. This is where I get uncomfortable here. And Notre Dame is eight. Then after that, I think Alabama should be nine. Ole Miss should be 10. Georgia should be 11. And then Boise State should be 12. I'm not confident this week. Week one, I was extremely confident. Week two, I was extremely confident. I think I feel good in the bracket one through, I'll even go to six. But after that, I think the placing of the SEC teams is crazy because if you did say to me, hey, Alabama, Ole Miss, Georgia, do you like them over Penn State? I would say yes. Do you like them over Indiana? I would say yes. Do you like them even over Notre Dame? I would say yes. But I got to judge what has happened on the field. Notre Dame only has one loss. Bad loss, but only one loss. Indiana hasn't lost the game yet. Penn State only has one loss. Ohio State only has one loss, and it was to Oregon by a point. So I know that's heavy Big Ten. And after this week, you'll see Indiana probably fall if they do lose to Ohio State. If they don't lose to Ohio State, then Indiana will rise, and Ohio State will fall. But I wonder if they try to jump up and elevate these SEC teams this week and the ordering of Bama, Ole Miss, Georgia, how high they will get and how they will rank those three teams one compared to the other two is fascinating to me because I really do believe that Alabama and Ole Miss should be ranked higher than Georgia because they beat them both this year. So that's just something that I have thought about. So that means I have Oregon, Texas, Miami, BYU buys. And then the way the matchups would be Boise State at Ohio State. It would be then Georgia at Penn State, Ole Miss at Indiana, and then it would be Alabama at Notre Dame. And if I had to be honest, though, Boise State at Ohio State, I do think Boise State could give Ohio State a game. They only lost to Oregon by 3, but I think the Buckeyes would win. Georgia at Penn State, if that was the matchup, give me Georgia all damn day and night long if you want to, depending on the time of the game. Ole Miss at Indiana, I would take Ole Miss. And Alabama at Notre Dame, I would take Alabama. So even though I believe in those SEC more teams more, a little bit more than some of the Big Ten teams, once you get past Ohio State and Oregon, that to me is going to be the fascinating part of the night, is how these SEC teams are ranked and how high they are ranked and who jumps over the other teams. So that's what I think is going to happen tonight. Oregon, Texas, Miami, BYU with the byes. Boise at Ohio State in the 5-12. Georgia at Penn State in the 11-6. Ole Miss, the 10 seed, at Indiana, the 7 seed. And then Alabama, 9, at Notre Dame, 8. All righty, 855-212-4227, 855-212-4227. It is the Zach Gelb Show on the Infinity Sports Network. We will take a break. We'll come on back. We'll update you on some of the biggest stories in the world of sports with some audio. We call that segment the News Brief, where Michael Irvin, playmaker, has something very interesting to say about primetime. And also, Myles Garrett is sparking back up that beef between him and TJ Watt from the Defensive Player of the Year awards that did happen that we were a part of as well. So we'll get into all that when we return. Update time first. Here's Zach. All right, it is the Zach Gelb Show on the Infinity Sports Network. Right now, let me tell you about our friends at Ethos. And this portion of the show is brought to you by Ethos Life, the easy way to get life insurance in 10 minutes, up to $2 million in coverage with no medical exam and just a few health questions. Get your free quote at checkethos.com. Not available in all states. Stu, let me just throw this out to you real quickly, because I've said this before, and I stand by it. Just because you win your conference championship, I don't think it should guarantee you a bye spot in the college football playoff. Because here's what annoys me, is that we look at these teams 1 through 4 in terms of the 4 teams that get byes, and I look at the AP poll right now, and tonight, you know, I do think that it's going to be the core 4 conferences that are going to get a bye. I do. Even though when you look at the AP poll, Boise State is ranked in front of BYU. Boise State's 12, BYU is 14. And I know that the AP poll and the college football playoff rankings are different. But I've always been annoyed with the way that this has been kind of presented, and it's one of my biggest gripes with the 12-team college football playoff in this format, is that the 4 highest-ranked conference champions get byes, but we always put a team like Boise, who would be the highest-ranked non-core 4 conference champion, in at that 12 spot. I do my rankings how I think they will be, not what should be happening. But if you look at the AP poll, I think you have a great case to make that Boise should get that 4th bye spot tonight, and BYU should be the team that's falling down. So what do you think about that, Stu?
Yeah, I don't love that idea of it, and, you know, having the automatic bye. Like, I think if you're a conference champ, they should all be guaranteed a playoff spot. I'm totally fine with that. But to guarantee, like, let's just say, for argument's sake, BYU is the 4. They might be the 12th or 11th best team in the play. I'm just saying.
Well, how about this now? Miami's 11, Boise State's 12, SMU's 13, BYU is 14 in the AP poll. Miami would have a bye right now. BYU, right? You would still think they would defer to the core 4, would get a bye. And then, like, those teams in the AP poll are 11 and 12, Miami and Boise. And then BYU is 14th, but then Boise would be thrown all the way at the bottom at 12 because they play in a smaller conference.
Yeah.
I don't even think Miami should get a bye. I agree. Like you said, guarantee a playoff spot. You win your conference, you're in. You're in. But if you don't, you don't need to get a bye. You just automatically get in. Because that's where I think the seeding gets all wonky. And I know what the fear would be. Oh, then they would just start making the 2 Big Ten teams, 2 SEC teams that would end up getting the bye
right
each and every year. So that's just where I'm kind of at on that. 855-212-4227, 855-212-4227. Let's go to Jordan in Calgary. He wants to get back in on the Aaron Rodgers Jets conversation. Jordan, go ahead.
So I don't think Joe Douglas deserves to lose his job. I think Aaron Rodgers deserves to lose his job because he has run total roughshod for that organization. I think it's pretty clear and obvious that Robert Saleh should not have been fired. The defense looks a lot worse without him. Joe Douglas is basically, he's created a lot of really good picks, and he's created a really good roster as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, but here's the thing. Yeah, Joe Douglas, Jordan, 7-9, 2-14, 4-13, 7-10, 7-10, and was 3-8. So to me, I agree with you that Rodgers should not be the quarterback next year, but there's not an argument to be made that Robert Saleh and Joe Douglas should have been brought back as the head coach or the general manager.
So is it Joe Douglas's fault that Zach Wilson just didn't work out? Because a lot of I think a lot of teams thought Zach Wilson was going to be a good quarterback.
Yeah, that's fine. He's the one that drafted him, and he wasn't. And a lot of teams, unless you're Shanahan and Lynch that took a quarterback that early because they built this great roster, you don't survive. He was able to survive. Joe, it's not like Joe Douglas, and I knew Joe a little bit when he was in Philadelphia. I thought he was going to be a good GM. So this isn't anti-Joe Douglas, but Jordan, when the guy's been around for 6 years and the most wins he has is seven, he's obviously not doing something right.
That's fair. I just think his roster construction looks really good, and arguably Zach Wilson looked better than Aaron Rodgers.
Yeah, I'm not giving Rodgers a pass, but like, you can't continue to be employed by a team when you've been around for 6 years and you make some good draft picks. And for all those good draft picks, hey, Sauce Gardner, he's overrated, but he's a good draft pick, right? But let's be real. You know, you go through the rest of them. Garrett Wilson, really good draft pick. Breece Hall, really good draft pick. What about Mekhi Becton? What about Zach Wilson? Right? There's also some misses here. Now, you're not going to bat 1,000. I get that. You're not going to hit everyone out of the park. But this year, the Jets' offensive line has been better. Joe Douglas has never brought continuity and consistency to the offensive line. And once again, 7-9, 2-14, 4-13, 7-10, 7-10, and 3-8. So even though I am someone that's saying the Jets don't hold Aaron Rodgers accountable, you're not just going to get rid of the quarterback in the middle of the season. So all these, you know what? You know my favorite questions were, Stu, when I was taking a test in high school and college, when they would give you multiple choice. And there would be an all-the-above option. Because maybe this is not true, but I always felt like the all-the-above option was always the right option. So who should not be back with the Jets next year? Robert Saleh, Joe Douglas, Aaron Rodgers, all-the-above. All-the-above is the right answer. Now, Saleh's already gone. Douglas is gone today. We'll see if Rodgers wants to come back. I think he will. And then we'll see with 1 year left in the contract if the Jets will bring him back. But I think that phone call from Jordan in Calgary is better placed at the end of the season or when we get a decision on Rodgers. Because if we sit here in the offseason and the Jets put out a statement, Rodgers, our quarterback, we believe in Aaron, right? Then I think that's the fair time to call up and say, well, if you get rid of Saleh, if you get rid of Douglas, you should also get rid of Aaron Rodgers. And it's kind of a lesson here. You could be a GM that is able to draft well. You could bring in some pieces, but if you don't get the quarterback right, you're going to be out of a job. But for Joe Douglas, who's a nice guy, has made some good picks, I can't sit here and say that he got like the short end of the deal here and he got a raw deal when, once again, wasn't as if he was only here for 2-3 years. He was here for 6 years in New York. 7-9, 2-14, 4-13, 7-10, 7-10, 3-8. But what world can you not even be average in and still continue to keep your job for that long? Let's go to Ed in Pennsylvania next up on the show. Ed, go ahead.
Hey, Zach, thanks for taking my call. I agree with you. I've been wanting to call in since Saleh got fired, but if there was any other QB on the Jets, everybody would be in agreement saying that the GM and the coach should have been fired. But since it's Rodgers, I feel like everybody just blames him for everything. And it's just, they were bad. Those two were bad before he got there.
Yeah, and here's a newsflash. Aaron Rodgers is a bad quarterback right now. You know, his bad play still may be better than a lot of other quarterbacks in this league, but it doesn't mean that he's this wonderful quarterback. Aaron Rodgers has been a bad leader here. Now, I'm not saying that Saleh and Douglas don't get any of the blame. They get a good portion of the blame, Ed, but Rodgers has to get some blame too. And to me, this is what makes a football team unsuccessful. When you have your quarterback running the entire damn show. Look at the end of that press conference in Green Bay when Rodgers ran through a list of players. And he was like, oh, they let this guy go. They let that guy go. They let this guy go. What did those players do once they left Green Bay? It was right to move on from them. Gutekunst ended up looking like a genius. And Rodgers looked like a fool. Even Brady and Belichick. Say how you want how we look at that now. Brady had power in the organization, but Belichick still ran the show. Because sometimes a quarterback, and a lot of times a great quarterback, shouldn't be picking the players, all of them. Because he may want someone, okay, you could listen to it. But then with that being said, you have to build a team. And basically the Jets said, because they're incompetent, oh yeah, we want Aaron. Robert Saleh, you could stay. No one thought Robert Saleh should have been brought back last year, but Aaron wanted him back. Why did Aaron want him back? Because he controlled him. And the moment Robert Saleh spoke out of line, they could say Woody Johnson made this decision all they want. Robert Saleh doesn't get fired if Aaron Rodgers doesn't sign off on it. Stop with the bull junk that the Jets keep on trying to feed to you and whatever they try to spew to you. And Joe Douglas was good at drafting some players. He also had a bunch of misses. I don't think Rodgers necessarily, but you look at that move today and it was Rodgers who was forcing that move to happen. No. The timing of it is bizarre. I don't think there's any benefit to getting rid of a GM right now this late in the game. You know, his contract was up anyway at the end of the year and he wasn't coming back. And they were just going to let that relationship run its course. But ultimately, Aaron Rodgers not playing well did Joe Douglas in. Because what did Jets fans try to tell us? Oh, the roster's so good, right? Look at this roster. All they need is a quarterback. And Aaron didn't live up to the hype. And I know he got hurt last year, but Aaron Rodgers this year, he's had some drives, game on the line. He's throwing picks, all right? And, you know, blame Mike Williams all you want. Mike Williams gets dropped in Pittsburgh, gets a game-winning touchdown instantly. And it's amazing to me, really amazing to me, that I have had so many people today respond to my tweet about the Jets being a job that's undesirable. And they keep on praising this roster. The roster's fine. But if the roster was this great, why do they only have 3 wins? It's because the culture stinks. And it's because the quarterback right now isn't a leader. You could only blame Saleh and Douglas so much. And I'm not, as I said, there's a lot of blame to go around here. But it starts with Aaron Rodgers. But don't try to tell me that, okay, and I'm agreeing that Rodgers shouldn't be back on the roster, that all of a sudden this becomes this desirable job, because a lot of this talent is overrated. Like, Garrett Wilson is a foundational piece. Sauce Gardner has to learn how to tackle. You know, Quinnen Williams is solid. He's good. You know, Breece Hall is a running back. Running backs come and go very quickly in this league. So they have some pieces. They have some good young players. But you still don't have a quarterback, and you have a buffoon of an owner. So when you don't have a quarterback and you have a buffoon of an owner, how is this a desirable job? How is this some great job? Okay? It's not. It's amazing to me how after a team that you could have argued before the season had a top 5 to 7 roster in the league can be this bad. Maybe we all just overrated the roster. 3 wins. I root for a football team that is a bottom 5 roster in the league. Still, we got something in common. You know? Right? And my football team, how many wins do the Raiders have, by the way, Stu?
They have 2 wins at this point.
Okay. The Jets are 1 off the Raiders with 2. And the Jets and the Patriots are even at 3. So, is it all coaching? Is it all the GM? I still put the blame on the players at the most. And it starts with Rodgers. It doesn't mean that Saleh was a good coach. He wasn't. It doesn't mean that Joe Douglas was this all-time great general manager. He wasn't. But what's the biggest reason why the Jets are failing this year? The defense is overrated, and the quarterback is looking how a 40, 41-year-old quarterback should be looking like, playing on one leg, and still not 100% from the injury that happened last year. And you got some players that think they're great that haven't accomplished enough yet in this league. That's why the Jets aren't that good. It's more players right now. And it's a culture that was enabled by this owner because the coach was just a coach in title. The GM was just the GM in title. Show was being run by Aaron Rodgers. You know? And that culture, Rodgers is supposed to be the savior. And when things don't go Aaron's way, doesn't do a good job in weathering the storm to pick it back up and have you go through some of the tough times. Instead, the Jets sank all the way to the bottom of the ocean. All right, we'll get to a news brief at some point in this show. It is the Zach Gelb Show on the Infinity Sports Network, but we appreciate the phone participation at 855-212-4227. Good calls today, 855-212-4227. We will take a break. We will come on back. Coming up at 5:20 p.m. Eastern time, we'll do a little overreaction, proper reaction. We'll squeeze in three things to watch tonight with the College Football Playoff Committee next. Also, we'll probably do a little bit of a news brief as well on the other side. We'll do two for one to start out the 5 p.m. Eastern time segment. You just show up. You get two things for the price of one. And guess what? The price here is free. If you're listening to us on one of our great local Infinity Sports Network affiliates or streaming us on the Odyssey app or via YouTube.